and welcome to the Shipping Exchange Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Fisher, and this episode is sponsored by Intermanager and kindly supported by the Honourable Company of Master Mariners. Intermanager is the only organisation dedicated to representing the ship management industry. It's an internationally recognised organisation and represents its members on an international level, lobbying on their behalf to ensure their views and needs are taken into account in the worldwide maritime industry. While the number of reported injuries and fatalities may be dropping, accidents still continue to occur in the maritime industry. In this episode, we will discuss what more can be done to improve the safety culture of life at sea, particularly in relation to enclosed space entry deaths. I'm joined by three great guests. I have Fenner Boyle, who's Policy Manager for Safety at the UK Chamber of Shipping, Kuba Szymanski, the Secretary General from Intermanager, and Alvin Forster, the Deputy Director of Loss Prevention at North P&I. Thank you all for coming on the show. So let's set the scene a little bit, Fenner, with what safety is in the maritime industry. Are we a heavily regulated industry in terms of safety regulations?
I think in terms of safety regulations, the shipping industry is quite heavily regulated. There's probably more that can be done in terms of entry to enclosed spaces we'll speak later about. But yes, I think SOLAS has been a nice welcome introduction, all the amendments that get made to that. Safety is definitely top of everyone's priority. And the regulation is there to assist with that.
Who is the driving force behind the safety regulation? Where is it coming from? Is it governments? Is it companies?
Well, obviously, we can do the reality check. Where does it come from? Come from IMO. Is it okay that it comes from IMO? I wouldn't say so. I would rather like coming it from the statistics, from the loss prevention, where we are really seeing things, the reality check for that. Intermanager tried many years ago to introduce this shipping KPIs, which is run by BIMCO at the moment, where we thought education is better than regulation. So it would be easier for everybody to understand where we are and then seeing what we can do about that. And then probably IMO would stay away from that. So if you think about ISM code, many, many years ago, it was internal code for ship managers. And we thought this is the way forward. You don't have to force anybody. People need to understand why they are doing it. So there's a lot of buying into it. And I think that's why Intermanager is pursuing this issue now with different things. We've got lifeboats on our horizon, but we started tackling the issue with enclosed spaces. And hopefully statistics and other bits and pieces will get us talking. And then maybe just beyond talking, we will come up with some solutions.
Alvin, you agree? Is it possible to find a balance between risk management and safety culture against the regulations with statistics?
Yeah, it's you've got to have regulation, but it's got to be good regulation and just applying more and more on top. For regulation to work, it's got to be correct and it's got to be workable and enforceable. And I think the whole safety management aspect of it is very true. Safety management systems, the ISM code, you know, is that being used as it's meant to be used? You know, do you need to have more regulation or do we just need to fix safety management? Go back to first principles, what it was designed for. It's not there to be a backside covering exercise for the shipping company for when things go wrong, or it's not to, you know, solve things with another procedure. It is there to help the crew operate the ship. So rather than having just more regulation, so more sensible regulation and using what's there correctly.
So the episode we're planning on also discussing in great detail the enclosed spaces and the risks that they pose. Kuba, would you be able to just explain to our listeners what an enclosed space is for those who perhaps don't know?
There is a confusion, obviously, with enclosed space. A lot of people have no idea what it is. And more importantly, there is lack of definitions. And there is shipping industry seems to be lacking a lot of definitions. We have asked in our survey seafarers themselves and said, do you see the problem? Where do you think the problem starts? And as you would expect, they don't see that necessarily with themselves. Having said that, we were quite amazed how well drummed into seafarer's head is that it's all their fault, full stop. And they have to do more and more and more and more. But to try to get them out of this thinking and asking questions, actually, how do you know this is enclosed space? And seafarers say, actually, I don't know. I was told it is. So what constitutes enclosed space? Is it actually prescribed in SMS? No. How about ISGOT? Wow, what an opening here. Because even the LPG, LNG companies are interpreting definitions in ISGOT completely differently. And funny enough, class society comes along and says something different. Flag comes along and says completely different thing. And then we are surprised that poor Filipino AB have no idea where he is, what he does, and why he or his colleague are dying. So, as a result of this, I hope Intermanager highlighted areas where we, higher up than ship's boards, ship's decks, we need to get our act together. We need to start thinking, how to make it very simple for those who are using it and maybe take it away completely from them. Maybe we have too many enclosed spaces. Maybe we don't need enclosed spaces. Maybe we're visiting enclosed spaces too frequently.
Is that a risk that the industry is quite susceptible to, its misinterpretation?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with that. There's no standardization between companies, between terminology used. I think that's one of the problems we see when we're talking with our members, is one person's near miss is another person's different definition of the word. We would definitely say that the standardization and simplification of procedures and processes would certainly help in reducing the number of accidents at sea.
It's a bit of a difficult one, that, and it's, you know, do you go too far and, you know, prescribe everything on board, whether it's hazardous or not? Is that done by somebody ashore? Or do you train and empower the crew and improve their hazard awareness skills for them to actually identify a space that may be hazardous themselves? I think in an ideal world, the latter would be great. The crew members are micromanaged too much, so they don't get to think for themselves. They get in that mindset. And so it's, you know, they wait for direction. They wait for someone to say that space is hazardous, rather than being able to think, hang on, there's been a scrap metal cargo in there. It's rusted. There's a chance of oxygen depletion.
So, and that's brilliant, because all of a sudden I'll say something which will sound like a completely going off tangent. But our survey shows that. So seafarers would love to do that, what has just been suggested. But because they are hired and fired, they will never put their head above the parapet, because they know that their time on board is limited. If they say then this is hazardous to do, the next day they are not working there anymore, because there will be somebody who will come on board and would say, I'm happy to do that, because there's too many seafarers at the moment. And I keep saying that, because if there is any listener today who says there is a shortage of seafarers, then my telephone number is 076-24-498-266. Call me. I'll give you hundreds of British seafarers if you wish. I'll give you 200 Danish seafarers and 1,000 Polish seafarers. Okay, they've just been sacked by Maersk, for example. So here we go, answering your question. How can somebody say, I don't want to do that, I'll take five, because we are all saying that, take five, don't rush into things, when the office will immediately come back and say, guys, if you don't do it, I've got somebody else to come and they will do it.
So do you think there is too much of a blame culture in the industry when things go wrong? Fenner, any thoughts on this?
I'd say we definitely need to do more in creating a just culture and taking the blame element out, something we're looking at in the chamber with our members. The aviation industry seem to have a just culture down really, really well. We're a little bit behind, but they've got it written into regulation and we don't have that. We have this tendency in the shipping industry to look at everything negatively instead of putting a positive and making us, you know, look at it like we're doing something and actually doing it. So, yeah, I've been encouraging people to consider and start implementing just cultures far more.
Do you think the just culture from the aviation industry is quite so easy to copy and paste into the maritime industry? Or do we need to go one step further in promoting a good culture for seafarers?
A lot of the work I've been doing looking at safety culture for the Chamber has been to develop an engagement plan with those internally within our industry and those externally, including aviation and construction, Highways England, etc. And what I'm realising, it's not one size fits all in safety culture or in just culture. There are certainly elements from each of those that we can take and use and adopt, but we have to find our own way.
Alvin, do you mind defining what, in your opinion, a just culture is?
Well, you've got to get that balance. You know, you can't have a blame culture. If you've got a blame culture, people will conceal things, people won't go forward, and there won't be any trust. If you have a no blame culture, then you've got no accountability. So you need a system where people are accountable for their actions, but still have that trust that can be built. The just culture, it's certainly not a new concept. It's a mindset, and it's throughout the whole company at all levels.
Absolutely. I like this all levels. However, I would start from the top. Think about Boeing 737 now, 787-300. It wasn't pilots. It wasn't stewardesses who said, enough is enough. We needed two accidents, 390 people killed, when somebody at the very top said, enough, we're not flying. When will we see that in IMO? Something is happening and we don't understand what it is. Shipping stop. That would be super.
Is it the statistics for the number of deaths from enclosed spaces which sort of led you to do this study?
I'll tell you what leads us, and I'm sorry, you're not going to like me. The problem is there is no statistic. And how come in shipping industry, when we employ 1,500 people, not a single PNA club can have a statistics. We went to P&I clubs and we asked them, what is your statistics on enclosed space? Ouch, you know what? What's enclosed space? What's the definition of an accident? They don't have it. So how responsible is our industry employing people, sending them to very difficult areas and not even knowing whether we are killing them or not? So yes, our statistics, we went around, we fished those statistics. Then we've got Association, International Bulk Terminal Association. They did a very good job. And we've got MIF, Marine Accident Investigation International Forum statistics. So we've got fragmented statistics. Why don't we have those people who are actually paying for those accidents talking to each other?
Clubs are starting to talk to each other. The claims data that we have, or the clubs have, isn't great. You know, the systems that the insurance companies have used in the past have been focused or designed to work on just numbers, to forecast claims predictions, etc., and not to allow a proper in-depth analysis. And it's something that we all acknowledge. You know, we are trying to work to make some sense out of our data.
Is it perhaps maybe too little too late? If the P&Is, you're supporting each other mutually through other ways, but why not statistics sharing for the protection of seafarers? You know, why is it taking so long to put your hands up and say, we need to be doing some collective research here and collective statistics to help the industry?
The shorter answer is I don't know why it's taken so long. When you've got 13 P&I clubs, if you've got 13 of anything, it's very hard to get all 13 to agree to something.
But I like what we are hearing actually now. It's never too late. Never too late. So I'm very happy to what I'm hearing now from right, left and center. Realization. People realize it is a serious matter. And it doesn't matter whether it is 96 or 112 or 106. The continuous process of people dying shows that whatever we investigate and conclusions we are drawing from our investigations are not getting to the root cause of a problem. And that came as a realization now, then we need to do something different. And this is where we have now gone with phase two of our survey, again to seafarers, again to the ship managers, and saying, who are the stakeholders in enclosed space? And I'm very pleased to see that class, shipyards, flag, owner, cargo owner, port, ship manager, crew manager are all now featuring as a stakeholder. And then if we ask every single of these stakeholders, are you a part of the solution or are you a part of the problem? So this is where we are trying to steer now and see how these stakeholders feel about that. How can you have free seafarers on board according to Safe Manning and fulfill with all requirement of SMS? Where it says two people in the enclosed space, one as a safety, and there has to be a secure safety.
So where does this responsibility lie then in regards to, you know, the safe manning for enclosed spaces or protecting seafarers against the risks that enclosed spaces pose? You know, is it crew managers? Is it the seafarers themselves? You know?
It's everyone's responsibility to look after their own safety and the safety of others on board. I don't think it can be down to one person. It can't be down to the master of the ship. It has to be down to everyone. If someone sees something unsafe or knows that something could be unsafe, they should be the ones that are given the power to intervene before it gets to that point and should be able to speak up. So whilst we talk about, you know, it comes from the top down, we absolutely have to be empowering from the bottom up. If your Filipino AB doesn't want to say something, we have a real issue there.
We have the study which has been completed and the articles of the study. And in there, one thing which really struck me was a quote of seafarers are being bullied on an industrial scale with unrealistic timeframes for things like cargo tanks. And from my experience, you know, the pressure which is placed on seafarers to get that vessel operational again to carry another cargo, like, yes, we need to be empowering those who are, as some might say, at the bottom of the food chain. But as this report says, they're being bullied on an industrial scale. That's a serious issue. That's something at the top needs to change rather than giving those at the bottom a voice. How can we change what is quite a harrowing statement?
What we have to realise is that everybody has an impact on safety. The two main influences, but the main influences there is that there's legislation and then there's commercial pressures. And it's the commercial pressures that filter down. And, you know, that's what undermines any sort of, if you're trying to grow a safety culture, that is what undermines it.
Thinking of Boeing, look at the air industry. They suffer the same commercial pressures to pull out all the Boeings which had a problem. That's enormous. That's absolutely, in our shipping industry, nobody even thinks of that. But they did. Not that Boeing director, chief executive really wanted to do that, but industry on the industrial scale had a system which says, sorry, mate, you are wrong. These planes are not flying. And I would love to get to this stage when shipping industry says, another accident in enclosed space, sorry, no enclosed space entries.
Regulators grounded those
flights.
Because so can port state start detaining ships or ships of a similar design because someone dies in an enclosed space?
This is great because you immediately shifted now into the design. Because at the moment, what we are saying is seafarers are not trained properly. They have to be more trained. We have to train more. And we are saying you can't train even more seafarers. They are trained. We are creating an environment that very well-trained seafarers are failing. And I'm getting to nitty-gritties now. Seafarers are saying, how am I supposed to know what is the atmosphere in the tank? Tank is L-shaped with 17 bays. Do I have 17 probes installed in the tank? Nope. I've got only one probe at the last bay. Does it mean that 16 other bays are all clear? We seafarers know, no, we don't. There are pockets. We are walking into those pockets. So what SMS says? Oh, you have to walk in the scabos, you know, the compressed briefing apparatus. But where? You know, that means then you are accepting the fact that atmosphere in the tank is poisonous. It's killing. So we are not supposed to do that, but we do.
So the responsibility, you would say, lies more with those designing vessels?
I think, as I listed, you know, everybody has a role to play. Class is approving that design of the ships. Naval architects are coming with this, and they are meeting requirements laid by flag state.
But a lot of these state-of-the-art ships which are being built have been designed, built, delivered in a period of the same time period where, you know, dozens of seafarers are being killed in enclosed spaces. Correct. You know, so it's not improving over time, would you agree?
I don't even know if ship designers have even taken this into account, to be perfectly honest.
They don't know of those accidents. They sip in the ivory tower, and those, I'm afraid, those are not being taught at the naval architecture universities, for example. I would like to see that, whether that filters down to them.
So do we think that the safety culture charter or even the P&I clubs, if they group together, this could be a solution of delivering this message to the entire industry rather than just placing the emphasis solely on seafarers?
So the safety culture charter that's been developed by the Chamber currently looks for ship owners and managers to reassess their safety culture. There's nothing new in that document that companies aren't already doing. It's just an opportunity to review and improve. So it's a starting point. It's a rolling document that for us, we expect to grow within our membership initially, but then, you know, out to the wider maritime industry. And hopefully things like that will then come from it and improve safety standards overall and particularly safety culture.
That's it. As everyone has an influence on this, you know, we've got to get the message out there and keep raising awareness, but actually let people know why this is happening. Because we've probably already established here that it's not a simple cause to this. There's many, many factors that lead to these incidents. If we can get that message out and get people to get a better understanding what causes the incidents, all too often people just say they're blaming on the crew. They'll say that crew standards nowadays are terrible. This is what's causing the problem. It's not. Any more mandatory training, it's not going to solve the issue because we're not tackling the root causes. None of them are simple.
I would love class, for example, or flag state, or even ship manager, to take five and think, I've got a ship. Ship has 38 ballast tanks. I've got 6 deck crew. My SMS says that all these have to be inspected every 6 months. How does the math work here? And how can 6 people visit 38 tanks every 6 months, bearing in mind that this ship is not doing anything but carrying cargo, and so on and so forth. And why class is quite happy, along with the flag, to say, yeah, it is doable. And my question would be, okay, very good. So how many people would actually go and inspect the tank? 2. Very good. Who will be the safety net for those guys? Another 2. Fine. Are these guys asleep sometimes? Or they are not asleep at all? Because maths would not work here. So why we are coming up with completely unrealistic regulations, which tick, everybody can tick the box, but when it actually comes to seafarers who have to perform all of this, they are cornered, and that's what we are saying, bullied, then they really have to do that. If they were working on a long-term contract, they would probably be part of the industry, part of the business. They would be listened to. But today, if you're an Ukrainian master who knows that after 2 months he's going home, and if he is troublemaking, he's not going to be reemployed. This guy is never going to make a trouble. He is going to say, yeah, I can do 45 tanks if you want. In 5 minutes? Yeah, no problem. I can take them off.
Yeah, I think this also touches on safety management systems. You know, the procedures on board and the plan maintenance schedules, they're all written by somebody in the office who's probably, you know, possibly too detached from the realities of what's happening on board. You know, there's that disconnect between the shore and the ship. So the safety management systems that require these, you know, these checklists or these frequency of inspections, it has to be workable and realistic. Otherwise, crew members, you know, we're resourceful people. We'll get workarounds, we'll take shortcuts, we'll get it to work, but not in the way that the procedure or the safety management system intended.
If we take a step back and look at a couple of, or the last maybe 4 or 5 decades, has the number of deaths in enclosed spaces been increasing, decreasing? Is it been the same?
I do know, actually. Funny enough, because I asked this question, how can we talk about the problem if we don't know? First of all, it's extremely difficult to get trends. We do have them now. Okay, well, I am quite embarrassed because as ship management organization, we do not have our own statistics. I had to go back to, as I said, Marine Accident Investigation International Forum stats. MIB provided something. Paris MOU provides something. And we looked at that. Very interestingly, International Bark Terminal Association realized that they lose a lot of shore people, stevedores. And in last years, especially in last 2-3 years, they saw a spike. So we talked to them and they said, are you sure there is a spike? They say, actually, maybe we started looking into it more and our statistics are better now. So we have to be careful that our reporting, improved reporting, does not skew the picture. Then we got a problem, Houston. But as far as I'm concerned, to be perfectly honest, I don't care. At the moment, I cared, and we now realize we do kill people, and people are coming from all sorts of ships. And I've got stats in front of me, and general cargo ships, fishing vessels, bulkers and tankers, are those core ships where we see the same numbers. Okay.
So it's the same, or is it better or worse, or is it?
No, these ships, those four categories, which surprises me, the fishing boats as well. What is common? Holds. They all have cargo holds. And this is where people are dying, okay? It's not necessarily ballast tanks. It's not necessarily void spaces. We do have odd chain locker accidents, but majority are the cargo holds. Cargo holds. And many people do not realize that cargo hold is enclosed space, especially if you are carrying fish meal, if you are carrying wood, rust mentioned before. This is where the oxygen-depleting atmosphere is becoming an issue.
If these seafarers are not aware that what might seem quite obvious, that a cargo space is an enclosed space, then is that not a failing in the training? But then we've also said that mandatory training isn't the solution. How can we make sure that people are aware?
Seafarers are extremely well aware that this is enclosed space and this is dangerous space. But if they've got only one oxygen meter on board of a ship, what owner, what kind of message is that? And I can go around. I was on the ship now from Isle of Man. I shouldn't mention the name of it because I'm a seafarer. I go to the bridge. I talk to the guys. And obviously, knowing that I will be here, I ask them a question. Guys, have you done the ballast tank inspections? Yeah, we have done. How many oxygen meters do you have on board of ferry boat? One. How many people in a tank? Two. What are we talking about, guys? How much is it? 150 pounds? Why we are not giving everybody oxygen meter? Why? And this is just a personal one. We should also have a proper oxygen meter which is able to measure all the levels on the tanks and everything. So what are we doing, basically? Seafarers are very well aware, but they are not brave enough to say, sorry, unless I've got equipment on board, unless the tanks are properly prepared, I'm not going in.
So Fenner, if the seafarers are aware of the risks posed and it's mandatory training for seafarers isn't the answer, is there any value in perhaps training for those working ashore side? maybe risk management training, but more specific to the risks that are at sea? Is it something that perhaps the Safety Charter has looked at in raising the awareness for those who aren't seafarers but have very important roles managing seafarers ashore?
Yeah, I think there's a role there potentially. I do agree with what Alvin said earlier, and that there's a bit of a disconnect sometimes. I think it's a bit of a generalisation to say entirely. I think it's also a massive generalisation to say that all seafarers are trained and know what to expect, and that a cargo hold is an enclosed space. You know, we'd like to think that, but actually on a day-to-day basis, if you're loading and unloading on a weekly basis, do you always think that? We have to be pragmatic and we have to be a bit honest with ourselves. I think there's a lack of honesty in what we're actually doing sometimes in the industry. I think training is never a bad thing. I think refreshers are always going to help. We are trained to know the way to deal with certain situations, but extra training never hurt anybody.
So you're an ex-seafarer, and your role now is safety, you know, through and through. So do you draw on your experiences of being a seafarer? Do you think that those responsible ashore for the safety of seafarers, you know, almost have to be seafarers to actually appreciate fully the risks posed?
I don't think they have to be. I think it certainly helps. I use the example quite often of crossing a road. How often do we cross a road and do what we did when we were children, where we stop, look and listen? You don't, especially in London, you just step out and walk across the road. It's exactly the same as being on a ship, and 3 months down the line, you're not holding the handrail as you're walking down the stairs, and you might fall, slip, trips and falls as one of your accidents. So I think we have to be realistic that you don't have to be a seafarer. It certainly helps the awareness, knowing the constraints, the pressures, you know, and the life on board. It's a very, very different situation from being in an office. So there is definitely a connect there that needs to happen, but it's not a must-have. I think there are things companies could do to encourage that more and get their shoreside personnel on board their vessels and let them see it. But it's quite difficult. They're running commercial operations. It's not always as easy as that.
Are there any companies which have really led the way in doing this, in getting both their shoreside personnel engaged with life at sea?
We certainly hear it from our Safety Culture Working Group that these things are happening, that there are incentives for reporting perhaps, and sometimes that doesn't work for some companies. Ship visits, and then we have the conversation of, well, actually, how realistic is it what you're seeing at the time? Because, you know, you have it, your DPA comes on board, everyone smartens up a little bit and behaves a little bit better. It's not necessarily a realistic view that they're seeing. So there is work being done. It's going to take time. That's the other thing. You know, this isn't a snap your fingers and it's all sorted. Safety culture is a huge element of all of this, and it needs time to change and be embedded. And the way to do that is to be starting with cadets as they're coming in, start on the rating apprenticeships and get those messages ready to be and empower those people so that when they do go on the ship and eventually end up managing these companies, they can share those lessons and make everything safer.
I mean, Alvin, do you have any ideas perhaps on how we can deliver that message quicker to those maybe at the top?
I think those at the top need to have an understanding of what the reality is in their company. That's one of our areas of focus at the moment. It's, if you don't know what the problem is, you won't know how to solve it. And if you don't know what the problem is and you want to solve it, you'll end up spending a fortune on consultants. Safety cultures can take years and years to develop, but it can be destroyed by one message from a superintendent by saying to the ship, just get on with it. I don't want to know how.
To support what Fena was saying, what we have seen in InterManager survey, actually, the best reports or the best answers to the survey came from the companies where DPA or even maybe chief executive himself to the survey on board, carried it on board of the ships and said, guys, help me, please. I need to understand what's going on. I didn't realize you've got a problem. I now want this. There were three companies who did it, only three out of our 106, where the top senior management actually said, you know what, guys, we really want to know that. So that's one side of the spectrum. And then you've got the other spectrum when chief executive just passed this on and said, hey guys, get on with it. So DPA said, get on with it to HSEQ manager, HSEQ manager to fleet manager to technical super, and technical super has forgotten about it. So maybe if chief executives are listening to us today, they can actually put their right hand on their heart and say, what have I done? Do I actually know what my people would be facing when we ask them to do the enclosed space?
Is there a way that we can almost incentivize people to report or promote a safety culture. We see a lot of articles more now, from what I see, a lot more now regarding pollution, people whistleblowing on things that are going wrong, and you know, some of the payouts that they get. You know, Alvin, you know, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, you've got to be very, very careful with incentives because it can promote the wrong behaviour. If you start rewarding reporting of near misses, people start reporting trivial stuff. You lose the whole essence of it. It doesn't support the system. But they've got to be confident that if they report a near miss, that something will happen and they are listened to. If it disappears into a black hole, they'll lose faith and they'll not bother.
We see in the Nautical Institute magazine, they have the Mars, which they're working on, and they have a list of companies who are involved in reporting it. You know, what's the benefit for them, and why can't that benefit be felt, you know, across the entirety of the industry? And more so linked directly to yourself, you know, 6 out of over 100 companies. That's a tiny, tiny fraction. And why aren't they interested?
Obviously, yes, I do think about that. And I think we lost continuity. Shipping industry used to be all the way through. You were third mate, you were cadet third mate, you went all the way up. With corporations, with arrival of corporations nowadays, you've got chief executive who has never ever been a seafarer or has never ever been on his own ship ever. There is no connection. In my opinion, and I'm speaking up, saying this does not work, guys. This is the shipping industry does not like chief executive brought from somebody else from the chocolate industry because he's a very good manager. This does not work in our industry. And if I'm wrong, please call me and say, Kuba, look, this company is actually having a very good result because we have brought somebody from outside and it's having a very good effect. I would love to see that. I see the good companies are those companies where there was mentoring going through, when people were actually involved. They know their own masters. They know their own chief engineers. They work with people. People at sea are not afraid of their own DPAs and so on and so forth. There is connect. There's absolutely no disconnect. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, shipping industry, we are disconnected. We've got people, my previous company and your existing company moved away from the Isle of Man, is managed now from Singapore. Have you ever met your technical superintendent? Have you ever sailed with him? Because I used to sail with my technical superintendent, and I was able to pull him in and said, stop it, it's not going to work, okay? Now I've got somebody who I never met. And this is my question when I go on board of the ship, and I ask AB, who is your technical superintendent? No idea. But he was on board 3 days ago. Why is he not known?
Well, I've met ours in the office. It's part of the induction to the company. And I think there's a great value within TK with people raising their voice and with ideas. Even if their ideas might not be great ideas, having a platform to be able to put what you're thinking across, and HSCQ will take it seriously and will actually read them. And I think that's good for the seafarers and makes them feel like they're part of a wider organisation rather than just being individuals on board. I think, you know, is it fair to something that the Safety Charter can look at promoting and saying seafarers aren't simply there just to do a job, they're there to be part of a wider organisation, give them an identity, and maybe they will then become more committed to the safety of that organisation which they're a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. We look at this quite often with our Safety Culture Working Group and did so at our seminar last year, where, you know, feedback, as Alvin was saying, it needs to happen. You can't just ask people to report. If I did that in my office and I didn't get a response back from someone, I'd be pretty angry. I mean, it doesn't change just because you're not in front of someone. You still have to provide that feedback. Absolutely, feedback's essential. You must be able to say to someone, this is what we're now doing because you've come up with an idea, good or bad. Thanks very much. You know, this is how we're going to change things.
So as a final thought, another suggestion from the report was the renaming of enclosed spaces to indicate a fear factor as such, raising awareness of the dangers that they pose. So rename an enclosed space with a fatal space. If we're all seafarers, would that have been more impacting to you if someone said we're going inside a fatal space today, Fenner? Would that have made you stop and think, why is it a fatal space? Am I prepared to go in? More so than if they said you're going in an enclosed space?
I think that's a tricky one. I can see why the change would be more alarming, and I don't think it would solve the problem, if I'm totally honest. People would just say, oh, okay, it's got a different name, it's fatal, but, oh, look, I came out of it last week, so probably not as fatal as it first was thought. I think actually it's got the opportunity to have the opposite effect. I don't think it's the name. I think it's the awareness. I think it's the resources on board, like we were talking about earlier. Changing the name of something doesn't take away the danger.
Alvin, you agree?
I think it might scare someone for the first time. Then after that, you just get desensitized. It wouldn't. I don't think it'll.
Well, okay, then I have to disagree with you, otherwise it would be very boring.
Yeah.
I would say for the seafarers, I agree with you. Seafarers would probably get very accustomed to it. But imagine now somebody from Copenhagen sending a message, I need 7 reports from the deaf place, please. They are overdue. When he's or she's typing, I need 7 reports from the deaf place, hopefully she would think, oh, sugar, I'm actually asking people to go to the deaf place. Do I really need that? Can't we just wait for the dry dock where we can pay for the very sophisticated team of people to come on board and do that? I wanted us to think about that. Give me any other industry in the world which would be sending users, you know, your own people, into the areas where you know they can be killed. You would always, in any other industry, restore on a specialist team. We are the only industry where we've got firefighters on board, paramedics on board, cooks on board. We do everything ourselves. And we are surprised that our guys cannot be as well trained as firemen, who does nothing but firefighting 24/7. So how can we expect, how unrealistic we are to expect our master to be a very good accountant, very good pilot, very good, very good, very good, very good. It's no way, guys. It's only 24/7. So this is the reality check I am calling for. And either we are prepared to call this space a fatal space, and that means we are calling somebody who is profoundly trained to deal with it, or we say, no, it's a fatal space. I don't want to sign my name underneath sending you, to the place where they can not come back. I'll throw another thing. Who come up with CO2 as extinguishing agent for engines? We know that if we release CO2, we kill people. Shipping industry for many years was very happy to actually do that. With flag state signing, with class signing, that nobody else has done it, okay, except ourselves. So we need to stop it, I believe.
I think it's really interesting to hear the opposing opinions here regarding it. And it's very interesting what you said there, Cooper, about shipping needing a reality check. I think it's definitely food for thought. Thank you for all coming on the show. Really, really enjoyable conversation. And if anyone has any thoughts or ideas, get in touch with us on social media as well. Thank you for listening to the show. We really hope you enjoyed it. This episode has been sponsored by Intermanager and kindly supported by the Honourable Company of Master Mariners. Don't forget to leave us a review below and get in touch with us on social media if you have any questions or queries. Until next time, bye-bye.